You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here to discuss our December 2025 book club pick, Black Male and Bibinka, by Mia P. Manansala. And even though we are discussing our December 2025 pick, this is our first episode of 2026. Rira, Happy New Year. I feel like I haven't talked to you since before the holidays.
That's true. We unintentionally took like a break. It was like 2 weeks of no recording, no reading, which is actually kind of nice. But now we're trying to get back into a groove of things. I remember like last year during this time, we were also late on releasing our January or December book club pick because I was fleeing from a fire.
Yeah. So. It's all, yeah. It was my first holiday season as a dad. And man, no one really prepares you for just how much time you don't have as a parent of young babies during the holidays, especially when all the family are in town and everyone wants to see them. And so every day we're just calling the babies to someone else. But yeah, glad to be back into the swing of things. Thank you to everyone patiently waiting for our thoughts on Black Male and Bibinka. I'm looking forward to getting into this this story with you, Rira. I know you finished the book a while ago, and I also finished the book a while ago. So
I read this book twice, you guys, and I still like it feels like a haze. So I will do my best. I do have like a few bullet points, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it should be fun. Before we get started, as always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba. Where as an official Patreon supporter, you gain access to our members-only Discord server where you can chat with Ryu and I and fellow book club members on all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks in real time. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a quarterly Patron's Choice Book Club pick, which our January pick was chosen for us by our patrons. So thank you to everyone who participated in our selection process. As always, a quick spoiler warning. In our book club discussions, we do discuss the book in its entirety, and with Black Male and Bibinka being a murder mystery, we will be spoiling whodunit and all the twists. So if you do care about that and have not finished the book yet, this is your cue to hit pause on the podcast, finish the book, and come back and listen to our thoughts. But yeah, let's get started with our first book club discussion of the year. Rira, can you start us off with the book description of Black Male and Bibinka?
It's Christmas time in Shady Palms, but things are far from jolly for Lila McCoppagall. Sure, her new business, the Bruja Cafe, is looking to churn a profit in its first year. And yes, she's taken the first step in a new romance with her good friend Jay Park. But her cousin Ronnie is back in town after ghosting the family 15 years ago, claiming that his recent purchase of a local winery shows that he's back on his feet and ready to contribute to the Shady Palms community. Tita Rosie is thrilled with the return of her prodigal son, but Lila knows that wherever Ronnie goes, trouble follows. She's soon proven right when Ronnie is suspected of murder, and secrets surrounding her shady cousin and those involved with the winery start piling up. Now Lila has to put away years of resentment and distrust to prove her cousin's innocence. He may be a jerk, but he's still family, and there's no way her flesh and blood could actually be a murderer, right? So this is the third book in the Tita Rosie's Kitchen Mystery. The second book, which we did not read, was Homicide and Halo Halo. And in the dedication to Black Male and Bibinka, Mia talks about how, like, the last book, the second book, she was in a dark place. And so was Lila. So it was like a darker, heavier book where Lila was going through some things. And the third book, Black Male and Bibinka, like Mia was saying, yeah, this is a lighter book. Like, we have seen the end of the tunnel. So it's kind of weird to be, like, at the other end of the tunnel
when we did not go through the tunnel as readers.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Mia did a really good job catching people up who did not read the first or second book. So you kind of get the gist of what happened in the first two books. But it definitely felt like jumping in season three of a show and missing like an entire like 12 episode season in between. So there's new characters we don't know. There's some new dynamics.
Yeah. Like the second book, Lila had not opened her cafe yet. She was like having a hard time deciding to open it because in the first book, she was dealing with like, you know, being suspected of murder and stuff. So she's like, I don't think I'm in the mindset to open a cafe right now. But in the third book, it's like, yeah, the cafe is up and running. It's doing a great job. It is a staple cafe in the community. It's a cool hotspot. So,
yeah. I mean, also in that first book, Lila was the prodigal daughter returning home after leaving her hometown for like several years. So it's kind of cool to see her now as an established member of this community that she has returned to.
Yeah. I will say it was a little bit difficult for me to get a hold of like all of the characters that were just introduced. And I was like, oh my God, I don't remember so many characters in the first book. But I caught up pretty quickly. But it did take like two chapters, I think, where yeah. I was like, okay, let me get the cast of characters sorted.
Yeah, and it is a cozy mystery. So, you know, with cozies, half the fun is the cast of characters and like the slice of life aspect that runs parallel to the murder, right?
Yeah. People were asking in our Discord, like, what a cozy mystery is. And my answer to that is like, it's just vibes with murder sprinkled in.
Yeah. And some might say this book was more heavily on the vibes than the murder. And we'll get into like the murder mystery and how we feel about how everything resolves later on. But I definitely enjoyed reading about, you know, developing menus for the cafe and then Ronnie coming home and throwing a wrench into like the peaceful status quo that this family, like even without the murder mystery, would have been a pretty compelling like family drama.
Yeah. And, you know, Mia is very good at writing like the Filipino-American family dynamics in this book and also in her previous books. And the whole cousin relationship, I think she nailed it. You know, it's just like big. I mean, there's like two different types of cousin relationships. One is like you're basically like really close, like BFF, like pretty much like siblings. And then the other side is like you guys are constantly put against each other as like rivals, and you're constantly compared to each other, and therefore resentment builds. And it kind of seems like that was kind of the case. Like Lila and Ronnie were compared with one another. Ronnie was always like the bad kid, and then Lila was like the one that was like actually, you know, doing a good job of being like a good granddaughter and niece until she left. And even when she left, it was like more for like her education and, you know, broadening her horizons. Whereas like Ronnie was like, he got out of GV and then bounced. So like Lila's prickliness with Ronnie, I feel like that is very much like a cousin dynamic we see.
I kind of feel like it's a third version, which is like, I don't think Lila was compared to Ronnie like, oh, you should be more like Ronnie. Like, you know, there's the model cousin and then there's the screw up cousin. And Ronnie was definitely cast as the screw up cousin, both by his family and also by the town, right? He was kind of the scapegoat for a lot of things that happened in town. And it feels like from the text, like Lila understands that that was what was happening to Ronnie. Like not everything that was blamed on him was his fault, even though he did screw a lot of things up. But she kind of takes the family's line of like, whatever Ronnie's up to, he must be up to no good. And like those expectations carry through to today. But at the same time, like, it also feels a little like I had some issues with the way that Lila treated Ronnie, because given what she herself went through in the earlier books, you would think she would be more sympathetic to someone society automatically assumes to be guilty of something. But we also know that Lila runs on emotions. And, you know, with when it comes to family, especially family that has disappointed you, has history of disappointing you, those habits and prejudices are heartbreak, right?
I feel like with Lila, because she is an orphan and she was raised by Tita Rosie, like seeing Ronnie like screw up and being like and like causing drama, even though it's like not entirely his fault, like it's just like you're breaking Tita Rosie's heart. It's up to me to be like a good niece and like a good like daughter for her and like provide for her because you're doing such a bad job. And then he left for 15 years and she's like, of course I'm mad at you because like Tita Rosie went through a lot and like she didn't hear from him at all. No phone call or anything. She didn't even know that if he was like alive or still in the country. So I can understand like Lila being like, what the fuck are you doing here? Don't, you know, don't mess things up, especially when like the family is as stronger than ever. But it is like, I think Lila understands after being accused of murder in the first book that it's like, yeah, like this town is very trigger happy when it comes to like using someone as a scapegoat because they don't want to deal with a problem. Same thing with like the sheriff in town or the head of like the detective division who's just like, I don't care what the solution is as long as it's resolved.
Like, yeah, he just needs it cleared. And I think that's what didn't sit well with me was like I understood where emotionally it was coming from, but like rationally, like it felt a little unfair to Ronnie. And I agree, he does screw up a lot and he does make a lot of bad decisions. But I think watching how Lila interacted with Ronnie kind of something clicked that like, okay, now Mia does a really good job portraying the gossip network, right? The whisper network of the Filipino American community, you know, through like the gossiping aunties, right? The calendar girls. And Lila herself, like, you know, in cozy mysteries, you know, there are different types of investigators. A lot of times they're inadvertent. Sometimes they're confident. Sometimes they just stumble through it. And Lila kind of is the more like it's vibes, right? She kind of stumbles through her investigations, going off her hunches and vibes. And her hunches and vibes all stem from also judgment, right? She is suspicious of Ronnie, suspicious of other people. She wants, like, she is following the gossip. And I realize her investigative superpower, like her skill set, is that of an auntie.
Yeah, she's an auntie in the making.
Yeah.
I do like how in this book she has gained experience in sleuthing. So she's like giving out her GPS like location to other people and telling them like, if I'm not back in like 30 minutes, you're gonna call the police. And making sure like her phone is like recording. I'm like, okay, she's learned from her mistakes. It's like she's not really an amateur sleuth anymore, but she's still a reluctant sleuth. Like half the time she's like, I just want to bake cookies for the winter celebration. I have so much on my plate. And then Tita Rosie is just like, can you look into this? Or it's like, or something's not adding up. I guess I'll look into it just so that Ronnie doesn't screw up and make Tita Rosie cry again.
Right. Is she reluctant or does she crave?
Yeah,
mess,
that's true.
Right?
Like, does she crave? And also, like, they're like, we need to gather information. So we are going to bribe people with delicious Filipino food and constantly be like, hey, like, have you eaten? Like, come sit down with us and just constantly ply them with food and conversation and hope that they you know, spill their secrets, like be vulnerable. And I'm like, yeah, that is like peak auntie behavior. I think Lila has, like, you know, in the first book she was just like, oh, the calendar crew, like, why are they so nosy, blah 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 blah, but she's using them as an asset in this book and I'm like, I love it.
And like,
I really love it.
And, you know, like a lot of really great, like, multi-generational Asian American stories, right? You kind of realize the child is just like the parent, right? She is just like the auntie. Like, she might not want to admit it, but she is, like, one day she will be the same as them, right?
One day she will do Facebook searches and, like, do a whole background check and figure out their life story.
Well,
and
she's got to use her skills somehow, right? once you have the sleuthing skills, you have to use it.
Yeah, for the greater good, you know?
Right.
But Ronnie comes into town unexpectedly, just like literally just walks in through the door. And he's like, I'm back. And I bought this winery. And they're like, where did you get the money to buy a winery? And he's like, I'm going to start my own coconut wine line. Like, I've honed my craft. And they're like, that's what you've been doing this entire time? Like, no call, no email. And you just show up.
I mean, I kind of get it, right? Like, if you're known as the town screw up, like, you can't go home unless you have something to show for yourself, right? It's essentially the prodigal son coming home. And, like, you know, he definitely has a complex, right? He knows everyone thinks he's a screw up. And he knows that, like, if he comes home with nothing, that's all he'll be. So, in his mind, if I come back with a business, then people will say, okay, he's turned his life around. But unfortunately, people also have long memories, especially in this community, and they kind of expect the worst from him. And it doesn't help that with what happens very soon after, people seem to be proven right, right? Like, even if he's not directly responsible for things going wrong, because he's attached to it, people are like, oh, of course it went wrong. Ronnie's attached to it. And I felt bad for him, but at the same time, he did not do himself any favors with how he also conducted himself with all the secrets that we learned about him.
Yeah, yeah. It was also like a question of like, why are you here? Because you've been gone for 15 years. If you're going to set up a new business, like, why are you setting it up in your new town? And it kind of is just like a perfect storm, because like he bought this winery because it was available for purchase for really cheap. They live in Illinois, you know? So it's just like, well, we can't afford anything in like Chicago. And then you learn that they fled from Florida. So it's just like a good business opportunity. But he didn't tell his business partners, Izzy and Pete, who are also his college friends, about how he just ghosted the entire town for 15 years. And they find out, like, slowly through their interactions with like, Ronnie's family. And they're like, oh, okay. So when he said that the town doesn't like him, they really don't like him. And they're learning some ugly truths. And Ronnie says, I have some important investors coming into town, and it is very important for us to like secure all of the funding. And that was Xander Cruz and his fiance Denise Sutton. Ronnie tells his mom, like, hey, can you like cook up a feast? Like, we need to like really like impress them. And this is where Denise Sutton, who we find out is an alcoholic, you know, she starts guzzling like all the house wine that they brought from the winery. And then she dies of methanol poisoning shortly after. And that is very sus, of course, because people are like, oh, she drinks like your coconut wine and she dies from poisoning. They thought it was alcohol poisoning, but we soon find out that it was not alcohol poisoning. It was methanol poisoning.
And the cops think there's foul play because they find like a puncture hole in the cork that doesn't match like a corkscrew, right? So now it's become a murder investigation. And obviously everyone points their finger at Ronnie, especially because it seems like he is up to no good, because when he comes home, his mom, Tita Rosie, starts getting blackmail emails. Right, or blackmail letters. It's email first, right?
An email first, yeah. And then it turns into a letter. Yeah, and like Lila's like, oh, what fortuitous timing. You know, my cousin comes back into town and Tita Rosie is being blackmailed into like giving $50,000 or whatever. And
yeah.
The blackmail says like, oh, like I know what happened in Florida. So
yeah, it says like they have blood on their hands or something. And that's another like red herring thread that Lila starts going down, is what happened in Florida. It is fun to watch her employ all of her investigative like knowledge and skills, and also delegate. Like, now she has like friends who can hack or search archives for her as well.
Was it Adina or Elena? Like, it was one of her two employees. Like, one of them is really good at talking sales, really good at small talk. And she's like, she releases her and she's like, go find out stuff.
Yeah.
Like, or like secure a meeting with this person. Because they're like, I need more information. Like, can you invite Izzy to, like, your next, like, event or whatever? And I'm like, wow.
It's karaoke night,
really,
right?
Delegating. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, what was it? Like, one of her business partner's brother is also a family lawyer who knows the hacker. I forgot how the hacker comes in. Like, someone knows
the hacker.
The
hacker, right? Is their graphic designer.
Right.
For Bruja Cafe. And, they just happen to be really good at tech, and they find out that the email was sent from a public library computer, and like their history gets wiped every day. So it's just like, well, we can't find out who it was. And there's a number of suspects, because it could be Izzy, it could be Pete, it could be Quentin and Olivia, who are Xander and Denise's assistants, who also is Denise's stepchildren.
Right. Also twins, which is a detail that I personally enjoyed. But so the story offers tons of red herrings. So I want to ask, like, at this moment, after we find out that it's probably murder and we've been introduced to the cast of characters and likely suspects, did you have any, like, initial hunches on who the killer might be?
Okay, but here's the thing. Like, in real life, when someone dies, the first thing you look for is, you know, their spouse. And in this case, we have Denise's fiance. So I was like, oh, might be him. Like, 80% sure. But then that would be too easy for a mystery. So I was like, okay, 20% left. Like, who's left? And I thought it would be Pete, because I was like, I don't know. This guy, like, is kind of jealous of
Ronnie. He gave bad vibes, even, right?
Yeah, I'm like, Pete is, like, super serious. He is, like, the quote-unquote dependable one in the trio. He and Izzy have been together since, like, their meeting in college, and Ronnie is pretty much in love with Izzy, and Pete is jealous of Ronnie because he's, like, even though he's, like, the black sheep of the family, he's very charming, and he gets along with Izzy really well.
Also, his fiance and Ronnie have impeccable chemistry, right? Or way better chemistry than he has with his fiance.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, we have someone who is jealous of the guy who is being blamed for the murder. So I was like, isn't that convenient? So that was my pick. Throughout the story.
I think the book wants you, obviously everyone suspects Ronnie in universe, but those of us who are genre savvy know it's never the most obvious suspect. And also Ronnie gives the impression of this arc's new recruit. Like, from the setup from the past two books, Lila's forming her party. Every single episode, it's like a shonen anime or like a JRPG, right? Every single arc, you gain a party member, right? The last book, she gained like her marketing intern. And so Ronnie, I pegged as this arc's recruit. And obviously, I felt like it couldn't be Izzy because Ronnie needed to get his girl, right? So my initial suspects were actually the twins and Pete. The twins, because they seem to have an adversarial relationship with Xander and Denise, as well as having, like, you know, again, being genre savvy, knowing that they were some of the few people who had access to giving Denise the poison drink. And I suspected Pete at this point because we didn't know a lot about him, besides the fact that he was Izzy's fiance, which sets him up in opposition to Ronnie.
Yeah, like one of the red herrings is, you know, the twins and their animosity toward Xander. And, you know, you think that animosity extends to Denise, especially when you find out that she's the stepmother and that she married their father for pretty much money. And she, like, they see her kind of as a gold digger, but she was actually, like, a really decent stepmother to them. And they're like, yeah, she has her issues, but, you know, she gave us a job and, you know, she made sure that we still get our allowance as soon as, like, as long as we're employed. So our life could be harder. So we don't really have a reason to kill her necessarily. It's not like we hated her. We hate Xander. Because, like, we don't think he's good enough.
Yeah, they also see him as the gold digger of the gold digger, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do feel like the whole like mystery could have been solved earlier if they had learned of the will earlier. But I guess that stuff is private, so they don't. It's not really public knowledge, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, how is Lila going to find out about the will? She's not connected to the family. She's not like Benoit Blanc, who is an official detective. She just has to follow the gossip and follow her instincts. And her instincts makes her think, okay, I need to figure out what kind of relationship Denise had with her fiancé. Because obviously you always go after the spouse in a domestic murder. So she's like, okay, he has a dog, I have a dog. We're gonna become dog walking buddies. And like they warm up to each other because they have like this bond as like dog lovers. And he's like, hey, do you think you can drop off my dog later at my house? And she's like, yeah, sure. And you know, some people might think that's like really fast when it comes to trust, right? But I'm like, no, if you're a dog lover, I feel like you give your trust to a fellow dog lover.
I do feel like part of the trust is also as like fellow brown people in like a
That's
town.
That's true. Yeah.
But yeah. Like,
I think he's Puerto Rican.
There's definitely like this innate, you know, bond that forms when you're minorities in your community. Right. And, you know, part of his charm was also him sharing his culture's dishes with Lila's family as well. And definitely, like, he is an awkward dude. He's kind of antisocial. He is not, like, he's definitely an introvert, right? Like, he's not good in social situations, which often read as suspicious. But, like, maybe part of it is like, I didn't want to suspect him, but I felt like he was the definite red herring, right? I did not think, if he turned out to be the killer, I would have been really surprised.
Yeah. Calendar crew, they're the ones who are spending the most amount of time with Xander, initially to just dig, but then I love how this relationship turns genuine. They're like, oh, you like lost your fiance, you have to like go through her things, like also like they took him to a casino because they're like, hey, you should probably you probably need like a pick me up. And then as soon as they find out that he has like a gambling addiction and they're like, oh, no, OK, we are leaving. We can do another game night with our church and gamble with like favors so that you don't actually gamble with your money. And when we find out that he has a gambling addiction or like a prior history with gambling addiction, I was like, okay, something's going on. He probably used Denise's money to tie himself with this winery. It just seems like this investment in this winery wasn't 100% secured, and Denise probably knew something was off and was probably gonna cut funding from them because she is like the person who is holding the purse strings. So that was like my initial, I'm like, okay, like Xander might not be the killer, but he has like the strongest motives right now. And I've seen men in real life get real embarrassed that their partner has more money than them and have killed to get control of that money. So I was like, okay. Okay, I mean, it's fiction, but we're going with real-life logic.
I can see that, but I also, like, I felt like that was such a big, like, it screamed red herring to me. I felt like the actual reason was something yet to be revealed. It would have been too easy to have that been the reason and being revealed that early in the, and again, this being genre savvy and not exactly, like, kind of going with it.
Yeah, I mean, for, like, a hot second, like readers can suspect Izzy because she starts like disappearing. They're like, oh, I have to run. And then it's like, you're not hanging out with your fiance. You're not hanging out with Ronnie. Where are you going? You're not at the winery either.
Yeah.
And then we find out that she is working a part-time job at a bar, at like a very popular bar that's like in like the next town over. And Lila finds out that Izzy is working this job because she wants to have a big wedding, but like obviously like they don't have the funding for the winery yet. And Pete, even though he is from a rich family, he has been disinherited. So she's like, okay, well, if I tell Pete that I'm working a part-time job, he's going to have his ego hurt. So I have to keep this a secret.
Well, they don't know he's been disinherited yet. That's the oh, final never mind, reveal never mind. That we find out.
Well,
yeah.
She's just like, oh, well, he has like a strange relationship with his rich parents. I guess he wasn't disinherited yet, but
yeah,
she's like.
And also she notices that there's something weird with the finances. They haven't really been like the joint account has not been added to. Right. Like,
yeah, her wedding account. Like, yeah. They've been consistently putting in money in there. And then she's like, he hasn't been putting anything in for the last like 2 months.
They've also had like a prolonged engagement. Right. And this is why I also felt like Izzy was a red herring, because I picked Izzy as endgame for Ronnie. And so I feel like she couldn't have been like, again, like, I think the issue here is this. I'm like being genre savvy instead of like going with the book. Right. And I feel like part of that is just reading so many of these over the years, like kind of
start, we're connoisseurs like, of
yeah,
this
you,
genre,
you start
so.
To like, you know, you start to play Clue, right? You have a little, your little checkboard, you're marking out who it couldn't be, who it could be, what the evidence is, based on the game and not based on the actual story.
Also, was it Izzy? Was it Lila? I don't remember, but they pitch like a side project to Xander. I don't remember what it was. Sorry, it's been a while since I've read this book.
There's a couple, but are you talking about the turning the winery into a brewery?
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, so yeah. They were like, okay, wine takes a really long time to make, and you can't open the winery yet, but Adina, or was it Elena, their family, who is like restaurateurs, they have like old equipment for making microbrews, and they're like, okay, why don't you sell microbrews for now, and then we can pair it with Bruja cafes, pastries and whatever. And Xander is like, love it, let's do it. Olivia, one of the twins, one of the assistants, she's like, I've pitched ideas to you and you've rejected all of them. And she's like, what the fuck? And he's like, well, your ideas are not like not planned out enough or whatever. So I was like, okay, we have resentment here. I feel like maybe we need to revisit the twins. Who knows? Also, I was just like, this is really bad. But in a book where there's a bunch of characters of color, you're obviously going to suspect the white people, especially the rich white people. So I was like, Pete and maybe the twins at this point, because I'm like,
yeah,
they're just so unpleasant.
I kind of like Quentin. He was kind of sassy. But yeah, I think towards the end, we were definitely pointing towards the twins and Pete, which, you know, spoiler, turns out to be correct. We can talk about how it works out a little bit later.
Well, there's the red herring with Ronnie, because they're like, why is he like, who is this Penny person that is showing up on his phone? And immediately I'm like, oh, secret baby. Again, connoisseurs of this genre.
Yeah,
and,
like, who is...
And just, like, soap operas in general. So I was like, yeah, he's a dad.
Well, also, his password is Isaiah, right? Like...
Yeah, that too. I was just like, dude, that is his kid's name.
Yeah, that's a baby's name right there. I feel like, you know, even though it was obviously red herring to us, the reader, the fact that he was making secret payments to a mysterious person that he hasn't told anyone about... also triggered Lila's auntie nosiness reflex, right?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Okay, so like she bribes the security guard at the winery with cookies, and she breaks into Ronnie's computer. I mean, I say break in like the loosest terms, because the guy has the password in like a folder,
yeah,
with like a post-it. So really, is it breaking in? And it's like very funny as she's like typing in his password, she's like, oh man, like I would be so easily hacked into with my home computer, because I can't remember my passwords at all, and I also write them down or have it on like autosave or whatever. But she checks his bank statements, and it turns out that he is depositing $3,000 every month, and he's been dipping into the winery account. And she's like, oh my God, this is extortion. Like, someone, probably the blackmailer for Tita Rosie, is doing the same thing with Ronnie, because he's afraid that his past in Florida is now going to damage his new business. And I was like, girl, what are you talking about? Like,
I think she
obviously
is
like child support payment.
Yeah. I think she is so blinded by her like disappointment in Ronnie that, again, like we mentioned before, her first instinct is, oh, Ronnie obviously messed something up. And that is obviously where this is. Like, she is falling for the red herring of it all. But also because Ronnie, he did keep it a secret. Like, it's a huge secret, right? It's a pretty, like, you claim to come back for your family, but you don't tell them they have an additional family. That's on Ronnie also for, like, not being upfront about it. I understand why, but also I think that the reason is bad.
I mean, also, like, he's not married. Like, he's a single dad. So that also comes with, like, stigma.
Yeah.
And I can see why he would be like hesitant to reveal that to his family. I mean, I'm kind of on Ronnie's side when it comes to like not revealing his child to his family, because like immediately Tita Rosie's like, I have a grandchild and you hid them from me for 3 years. And I'm like, you're not the parent, though. Like, you're not the one taking care of this child. And quite honestly, you're not entitled to access to another person's child, even if they're your grandchildren. So I was on Ronnie's side for this, but I'm sure, you know, other readers, different perspectives, biases.
I feel like he understood how his family was going to react and what they were going to assume, right? Because his own dad was kind of a deadbeat too. And, you know, I can understand not wanting to deal with that. I do, at this point, when Lila just like outs his secret child, I thought that was pretty messed up. Like,
that was messed up. I was like, girl, what are you doing? Especially out in public, because this is at like the winter. Actually, was it at the winter festival? I don't remember now.
I think, yeah.
Was it the karaoke party?
No, this was the winter festival, because remember the mayor made a big stink about it, that like they're ruining his winter festival.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So it was at the winter festival. It's out in public. And, trying to think, like, what else happened at this winter festival other than this big fight? Izzy runs away from the festival.
No.
I don't remember why.
This was... Izzy runs away from something. I think it was, like, the cookie decorating thing or not.
Oh,
like,
yeah, you're during right.
The festival is the climax, right? Because Ronnie runs away when he's confronted about his secret child. And then Pete goes with him to calm him down ostensibly. And then that's when Ronnie sends Izzy the secret code, the SOS.
Yeah, the dot, right? Dot, dot. And I'm like, what a lame
code. I mean, I get it. I
thought it would be like an emoji or something. Like, dot is not.
I mean, I get it. Like, you know, you have your secret code. Like when we used to go out, you know, to the clubs, you know, we would have like, okay, if you need help, this is the signal, right?
I mean, I didn't really have a secret code with my friends. They would just tell me. They're like, they would just straight up text me, be like, I'm in a really bad date right now. Can you call and pretend that your car has broken down and I have to like go pick you up? And I'm like, why don't you just tell the person that you're not into them and just leave? But
I mean, if you're in a potentially dangerous situation, you don't want to like escalate.
I mean,
like
you're
that,
out in
though,
public,
right?
And it's, I don't know. It was just kind of like, well, anyway, that's neither here nor there. So was it Quentin or was it Pete that went after?
It was Pete, because Quentin was hospitalized at this point.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm forgetting like a very big clue that happened. So Lila and Tita Rosie, they managed to get Xander to agree to let them go through his house belongings because he needs to get rid of Denise's things. And what is it? He's like, I don't want you guys to like he kind of has like a feeling that they're gonna snoop, but he's also just like, well, I'm gonna trust you guys to be as professional as possible with your church group. Not knowing that the church group is made up of the calendar crew, who are also like super nosy.
Well, I mean, I think he trusts them more than he trusts the twins, right? I think that's what it came down to.
Yeah. Well, he was like, I don't want any one-way personal connections to Denise to go through her things. I'm like, why are you doing that? Shouldn't people who have personal connections to your dead fiance go through her things? But anyway, they go through her things and what is it? They find a letter in one of the sneakers, one of the collector sneakers that Denise had.
Yeah, they find a secret love note, which suggests that Denise was cheating on Xander recently, I think, or at some point.
At some point.
Yeah. But I think at this point, you also, you also find out Xander has also been cheating on Denise with
According to Quentin, they're like just very toxic couple, bring out the worst in each other. Like Denise is alcoholic, Xander has a gambling addiction, and they just kind of feed all the bad behaviors with each other, within each other.
Yeah. So that was the big clue, which I don't think that was like a huge.
Yeah, but it was clue. Just like, well, it was during this time when Quentin got fired because he had tried to broken through one of the sealed rooms, and Xander finds out and he's like, you know, I was gonna give him Denise's like jewelry, like which includes like his
he wanted his mother's ring. Yeah, that's what he wanted to find, and that's what he was snooping around in the beginning for.
Yeah. But he broke into a room that Xander has always kept locked. And he's like, I can't trust you, blah, blah, blah. You're fired. And then shortly after, Quentin is hospitalized because he got attacked. So now we are caught up. Yeah, that was like a big thing that happened in the book that I just remembered because I read this book a while ago. But we are at the winery. Izzy and Lila show up at the winery to confront Pete and...
No, they show up at the winery to look for Ronnie because Ronnie has gone missing. Ronnie. Right, and Olivia calls to say, oh, they just left together. And then Lila was like, hold on, this is a trap. Let's keep going. That was interesting, that was a cool moment because at this point, I think she also suspects... something's happened to Ronnie. They have to keep going. They have to follow their hunch. And then at the winery is when this is like the second to last chapter. I was surprised everything gets revealed in one chapter. Pete and Olivia were in on it together. Supposedly Quentin was as well, for at least part of the scheme. And both the murder of Denise and also the pinning it on Ronnie. I will say we did miss one kind of moment where the murder weapon coincidentally falls out of Olivia's purse. During I think this was during the cookie scene.
The cookie decorating party. Yeah, yeah. Maybe. It doesn't really matter. But her bag falls and a bunch of vitamin vials spill out. I forgot which vitamin it was. But
she says it was B2. But I was like, no, that's methanol. To me, I was like, no, that's the murder weapon right there. There's no way the author would point out vials of liquid and have it not be like the smoking gun, right? Or the right. And this is when Lila very smartly stays out of sight and records the entire essentially they give a villain's monologue / confession about as they argue about what to do with Izzy, because Izzy charges straight in and confronts Pete, right? Because Ronnie is on the floor unconscious.
And Lila is just like, I've been through this before. Not today.
Yeah, I kind of felt like the reveal did come a little abrupt. The clues are all there, I guess. But also, I don't think we learned enough about Pete throughout for it to be him. And obviously it was going to be him because of how it was set up. But I don't know. I just feel like I wish there was a little bit more to it.
We get to see Quentin quite a lot, and we kind of understand what type of person he is. He's like a hot mess, and he is pretty reckless, especially when he was looking for his mom's ring, and you should probably be better at sneaking. But with Olivia, we don't really get much out of her. We know that she's the cooler one out of the twins. She has less external beef with Xander. And also, like, she's like, oh, I'm vegan, but I'm not really vegan because, or no, she says, like, I used to be vegan, but now I can't be vegan because of, like, health issues. And that's, like, the one thing that we kind of know about her, and that's it. I kind of wish I saw more of, like, Olivia, maybe, like, a scene with Olivia and Pete, like, just, like, a very subtle interaction between the two, just to tie everything together a little bit nicer at the end.
Yeah, I feel like the reasoning being, like, we find out that the reason they wanted to kill Denise was because of their father's will, which states that if Denise dies without an heir, they get the inheritance, right? Which is a pretty, like, you know, it's, I feel like it's a pretty standard murder motive in a murder mystery regarding inheritance.
Like, we find out from the calendar crew early on that Denise had stepchildren and that her husband, her former husband who passed away, he was like a rich guy who decided to not include his stepchildren in his will because he wanted them to make their own way. Like, yeah, we find out very early on, but then we don't find out that Quentin and Olivia are those stepchildren.
Yeah.
So after we find that out, we're like, okay, like, the motive is sort of building up, but it's kind of being pointed more towards Quentin.
Yeah. And so one of our book club members, Hubba Jin, had this to say about the quick resolution, which is, like, she didn't mind the quick resolution this time, mostly because she felt swamped by the end of year stuff. But a slower burn would have been nice. And she's wondering, what kind of ending would you have wanted? And I kind of feel like I don't really mind how it resolved, like the resolution. I don't mind that these were the killers. But I don't know. I personally wish that it was more, like, connected more to, like, the themes of the book, right? This theme, like, the main conflict in this book, besides the murder, is kind of Ronnie returning home and kind of shaking things up and not knowing if you can trust him. And, you know, part of the scheme of Pete and the twins were to blackmail Tita Rosie because Ronnie had told them that, oh, my family's pretty well off. They have businesses. And that's why they were trying to get money out of her, because we learned that, you know, the twins did not get the inheritance. So they had to work for their keep. So they don't have as much money as they would like. And we also learned that Pete similarly has also been disinherited by his family. And so that's why he was also dipping into the company funds, right? And so we find out, you know, the motive for them is money, right? They just need the money. And, you know, I guess that does make sense. But part of me leading up to the reveal was expecting that Ronnie's relationship to his family will be part of the calculus, right? Like, knowing that they had a scapegoat in Ronnie that already has a bad rep in the community, and using that to as a smokescreen, I kind of wish that played more into the villain's, like, plan. And that would link more, and that would link back to, like, you know, Lila realizing that, oh, she was also being played because of her prejudice against her cousin, right?
Yeah. I agree. And also just, like, I don't mind the ending. I just kind of wish there were a couple extra scenes to have it, like, simmer a bit more, because it did kind of, we kind of get a little bit too caught up in the winter festivities, or, like, the prep to the winter festivities. I kind of wish there was more winter festivities. I also, like, it's not Filipino Christmas. It's, like, the town's winter bash. And I was like, oh, I was hoping I would get, like, some of the Filipino, like, over the topness with Christmas, because that is something that I have heard from Filipino American friends. They kind of go all out for Christmas. And we kind of get, like, reference to it here and there. They're like, oh, bibingka, we don't make it that often. Like, it's usually, like, a holiday treat. And, you know, they're, like, cooking things that are only used for this holiday. And I'm like, I get it. And they also mention, like church festivities during this time, because a lot of Filipinos are Catholic. And I was like, okay, I'm getting references, but I kind of wish, you know, that was, like, more center stage than, like, the town's winter bash. I don't know. It kind of took away the fun for me.
I mean, isn't that just part of like a Christmas story? You have to have a winter bash. And I do like, I can relate to like the wanting to represent your culture's Christmas traditions and snacks for in your town's Christmas bash, right? Because that's also like part of it is they want to put their best foot forward and like share their wonderful Filipino inspired desserts and beverages. And I mean, this book is chock full of food references and food descriptions, and it did, you know, everything did sound very good. Even the coconut wine, I do want to kind of try the coconut wine.
They make it sound like more like soju, you know, or like more like vodka. They mention it's not like wine,
but yeah,
for marketing purposes, coconut wine sounds more appealing.
Yeah. But you know, in the end, you know, Ronnie is saved and redeemed somewhat. He's still in trouble for hiding his son. We find out that his baby mama is Izzy's cousin. And, you know, kind of wish we get a prequel of that, like, whole love triangle debacle, right? Like, you're so in love with your best friend, but she's engaged to this kind of square white dude. And so you hook up with her cousin and, you know, having a baby. That's a whole rom-com in itself.
Yeah. I mean, it's the epilogue, so I'll let it go. The epilogue was like a little bit too happy for me, but I get it's like
Christmas
after
episode.
Christmas. Yeah, I get it. But I was just like, oh, everybody is such a happy family. You
Everyone's
know?
Making speeches. People are turning a new leaf. We didn't even talk about Lila's boyfriend, Jay Park, the dentist, and his older brother, Detective Park, who is now in a relationship with Tita Rosie. And this was kind of confused some of our readers, who I think this was the first book of the series that they read, was like, wait, how old are these characters?
Yeah, I can see why that would be the case, because it's like, how old does the detective have to be in order to be in a relationship with Tita Rosie? How old is Tita Rosie? That because like when we think auntie, we think of like a much older woman, but it's like, oh, maybe she had Ronnie at a younger age and she's actually more on the younger side. So,
and I think Detective Park there's a age difference between him and his younger brother as well. It was kind of fun just to have like whenever Jay would appear to be like just the best boyfriend and like to not only humor Lila in her, I'm sure, sleuthing, but also like aid and abet, right?
Yeah, I mean, from context clues, it seems like Jay's older brother, I can't remember his name, but the detective,
I think it's Jonathan, right?
Yeah, Jonathan. Yeah, like apparently like in the last book, he was kind of rude to Lila and was kind of like against her investigations, was kind of like a stumbling block. So it is interesting that in this book, he's like, I'm not officially on the case for Denise's death, so I can sort of help you, but at the same time I need to make it not so obvious that I am biased towards you guys, because I would get in trouble. So I'm like, okay, like Lila is collecting allies with each case that she is involved in,
again, like a JRPG or shonen anime, like after every arc you have a new person gets added to the opening credits, right?
Yeah. But the real stars of this book were the dogs.
They were very cute. Yes.
They were very, very cute. I love wiener dogs. So the fact that Lila has one is terrific.
I just like wiener dogs with food names. Like, my cousin had a dachshund named Nacho, and he was the best boy.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. There's this one pug that I follow on Instagram. His name is Wonton. And I'm like, yeah, dogs with food names are the best. I do like how Nisa was kind of integral to the investigation, again, with Xander having a dog, having a pit. And, you know, like, there's a reason why.
Yeah, I mean, Lila has to use every resource in her repertoire to find the gossip, to find the chisme. And she is very good at it. One day she'll be a very good auntie. Other younger members of the community, beware, because you will never get anything past Tita Lila in the future.
Yeah, Isaiah has to watch out in the future.
So you picked this book because it was Christmas themed, and you did mention that you wish there was more Filipino Christmas, but did you feel like this fulfilled your goal in bringing the Christmas vibes to our Books and Boba book club pick?
I think so. Yeah. there was like cookie decorating and, you know, it was jolly. It was festive. I just wish it was more Christmas, but, I think it did the job.
Yeah, I did love that everything revolved around getting ready for the Christmas celebration. And if only there wasn't this pesky murder to sidetrack everyone at every moment. Our book club member, Kapachin, also asked if any of us tried the recipes at the back of the book. I will say I did not because I didn't have the time. And these recipes are very involved. Like, there's a lot to go in that goes. There's a lot that goes into preparing a bibinka.
Lola, the grandmother, the matriarch, like, she makes bibinka by like cooking it over charcoal, and that's like the OG legit way to do it. I'm pretty sure Mia experimented so that she could have like the right recipes to feature in her book, but I am not a baker. I hardly like cooking. I cook for survival, so absolutely no way I would make it.
Yeah, I guess with that, that'll do it for our discussion of Blackmail and Bibinka by Mia P. Manansala. Any final thoughts about the book?
I think it was a good read for the end of 2025. And I'm glad that we're starting off 2026 with, I guess, like a lighter discussion. You know, I don't think I could have dived into something way too literary, you know? Like, my brain is not there yet. So it's nice to ease back into book club discussions without, you know, heavy hitting themes. It's like, it's fun. It's the vibes. It's Christmas. Holidays.
Yeah, I had a great time returning to Shady Palms, reconnecting with these characters. A Cozy Mystery is just, you know, it's vibes. And it's also just, it's comfort food, right? And I had a really good time just like, you know, I listened to the audiobook because, again, very busy during the holidays. And it was just fun to follow Lila as she went about her investigation while also preparing for the big festival, managing her family, managing her relationships. I still feel like she was a little hard on Ronnie throughout the entire time. And I don't know why I sympathize with Ronnie so much, but I just, you know, again, I wish, so here's the thing. I wish she had come to terms with how her prejudice towards Ronnie affected her during the investigation and her relationship to Ronnie, and especially her outing of Ronnie's secret child in such a public manner. I wonder if that will come back or be addressed in future books. I did wish that we kind of sat a little bit more in that moment because I feel like that's where, you know, the murder mystery is a murder mystery. It gets solved. We find out who the killers are. But the heart of this book is this relationship between the cousins. And I feel like that also might have wrapped up a little too cleanly. I feel like some stuff was said, some stuff was done that, like, I feel like needs to be, like, processed, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we have that confrontation with, like, Lila being like, you walked out and you were... He's like, I cannot believe you made Tita Rosie cry again. Like, how can you do this after your dad, like, walked out and blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, okay, this is a lot of dumping blame onto Ronnie. And Ronnie said some things, too, being like, well, you ran away, too. And Lila being like, that's different. I went to go, like, get my education and stuff. And I just felt like that conversation could have opened up more wounds. I feel like,
yeah, not just wounds, but like also more self-reflection from Lila as well. Yeah, because I feel like in the end, I guess I wanted more catharsis on her end too, of like, she's also doing to Ronnie what the community did to Ronnie, and that might not be okay, you know?
I did like the scene at the karaoke party where they sang a song from the Goofy movie, Eye to Eye. That movie is so good. That's the soundtrack slaps. I'm so glad that Mia included that there. But
it's such a little morsel for millennials, right? Because I don't know if anyone else would know what the perfect cast means. Unless you were of that generation and watched a Goofy movie, right?
Yeah. I've been seeing like an increase of influencers dressing up as Powerline for like conventions and for like Halloween. And I'm like, I'm so glad that we all agree that the Goofy movie is one of the best movies of our generation.
I watched that movie in the theater. Did you also go to the theater to watch it?
No, I don't think so. I think we got it. We definitely got it on VHS or DVD. I don't remember which one, but my brother freaking loved that movie. And for me, I was like, the music is so good. And this was before streaming, but now I could listen to the entire album on streaming. The two Powerline songs are so great. And I love the opening song as well. But yeah, like I loved how the cousins were like, okay, we are working together to get the perfect score in karaoke because Filipinos take karaoke very, very seriously. And I just love that like bonding moment. That was a nice scene.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks for listening to our discussion of Black Mail and Bimica. If you have any thoughts about what we discussed here or thoughts about the book itself, please let us know either on Goodreads or our Discord server. We always love to hear your feedback on our episodes whenever possible. I guess before we go, we should announce what book we will be reading for our first book club pick of 2026. This was a patron's choice pick. So thank you to all of our Honey Boba members for helping us decide what book to read. So our January 2026 Books and Boba book club pick is Reef by Romesh Gunasekara. It is a historical fiction coming of age story about a young Sri Lankan chef and his life working for an opulent manor in Sri Lanka during a time of growing political turmoil.
This book came out in 1996, so it is an oldie. And the author, Romesh Gunasekara, is a Booker Prize finalist. So I would say this is more towards the capital L of literary. So
yeah,
thank you to our patrons for voting on this book. And there is no ebook version of this book, unfortunately. So check your libraries, and also you can order the book online for like a paperback hardcover edition on our bookshop.org affiliate page or wherever you guys find your books.
Yeah, so looking forward to discussing Reef with you at the end of the month. If you are a Patreon supporter, do check our Discord for our reading schedule so you can discuss with us week to week. But yeah, that'll do it for this first episode of Books and Boba in for 2026. Thank you so much for listening to our discussion of Black Mail and Bimica by Mia P. Manasala. And we'll see you all next time. Happy New Year, and I'll see y'all later. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Carrie Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa, to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former beer league player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.